Morning. So the idea is that we have some. So this morning we did things in momentum space, but you can equally well do things in position space. So let me recap in the position space version of what we did this morning. So we have so we're starting off with a relativistic scalar field phi. And we're assuming that the Lagrangian has a reflection symmetry just to sort of save on the number of things that we have to write down. And so if we write out the action here, it's going to be a function of some parameters, right? And we can be specific about that. So let me write that out just so we have it. So here we have so I'm going to be economical with my writing down of terms here, so bear with me. So this is the coefficient functions for zero derivative and one derivative terms, or sorry, two derivative terms. And we're imagining that these are all getting multiplied by some extra factors of phi here. So we're summing up from n is equal to 1 to as many terms as you'd like. And you can also write down more derivative terms beyond 2 here if you wanted. So that's the basic structure for that action. And in position space, what we would do is we'd rescale x goes to Cx and sort of ask how the various coefficients would have to be redefined as a result. So if we do that, then so what we're really doing is we're taking phi of x goes to phi of c times x. Okay, so we're changing within the arguments of all these phi fields. The scaling of their argument. Okay. And so if we do that in here, what we can do is define x prime to be c times x. And what we would want to do is rewrite the entire integral relative to x prime now. And derivatives we would want to write in terms of derivatives with respect to x prime instead of x as well. And so let's sort of just see where the c's would go in that case. I'll try to be explicit here. So here we'll have a 1 over c squared. And the reason why is because, from the integration measure needs 4 factors of c, but then the derivatives take up 2. And so you're left with a 1 over c squared here. So these are derivatives with respect of mu prime, or sorry, x prime now. And here you get there's no derivative, so you get the full c to the fourth in this case. And also in the case of the quartic term. And as we keep on going, similar sort of thing will happen. So inside this integral, for example, you'll have phi to the 4 over c to the 4. And then here we'll have the coefficients d sub n. We'll define new derivatives with respect to x prime. But that will mean that the derivatives will now eat up factors of c. So you only have a 1 over c squared for these terms now. And we still have this overall factor of phi to the 2n out front and all the extra stuff. So that would be the result of changing changing our integration measure from x to x prime. And so implicitly inside all of these scalar fields, we're imagining they're now functions of c times x, or x prime. Okay. And what we're going to do is define a new function, phi prime now, which is going to be designed so that the kinetic term absorbs your factor of c squared. So we're gonna say let phi prime be equal to phi over c. And then if we substitute that in here, then you'll see that we can get rid of this factor of 1 over c squared here by design in the kinetic term. So now we end up with del prime phi prime squared. And we're going to use this definition consistently sort of throughout the entire Lagrangian. So what that means is that this phi squared, we want to turn that into a phi prime squared. And so what you end up with here is not c to the fourth anymore, but only c squared in the denominator. And this is how we can sort of see how to read off the scaling of various operators in position space. Yeah. Is this somebody calling, or is it?
I'm just saying it's a Skype is in the background.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. It doesn't look like anybody's calling. So, did you see something earlier that?
I haven't heard anything. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Maybe that's fine.
All right. Okay, so this works out nicely here, actually, for these coefficient functions. So inside this bracket, if we rewrite this as phi prime, then you'll lose this c to the fourth, and similarly here for the derivative term. However, in order to rewrite this overall factor of phi to the 2n in terms of phi prime, then we'll need a factor of c to the 2n. So overall, you get factors of c to the 2n for both the CN function coefficients and also for the DN coefficients. So that's this has the phi prime to the 2n, or m to the 2n up front, and all the other stuff. Okay, so the moral of the story is that if we rescale our phi fields as follows, right? So this was involving phi of x, so now this is the same functional involving phi of c of x. Then you can rewrite that as the same action in terms of some new function phi prime. But you're required to rescale your couplings according to what we see here, which is the usual rules that you would expect. So we see positive powers correspond to irrelevant operators, and then negative powers of xi correspond to relevant operators. Okay. So now we're going to... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Doing this, did we implicitly change the argument of our field? So is it... phi prime of x prime now compared to phi of x?
Yes, it is technically. But within the action, x is a dummy variable. But we can call it x prime. So next thing to do now is to work out what the action will be in the case where we remove a fast phase from the scalar field phi. And so to motivate that, let me just remind you of the usual sort of definition of the phi field. So you can, in flat space, you can decompose phi using plane waves. And so So you can imagine the annihilation operators get all get a factor of e to the minus x.p in general, but in particular, for our purposes, let's focus in on the time dependence there and the exponential. So they have this form for some choice of creation and annihilation operators, which in general will depend on x. Okay. And the thing we like to recognize is that in the non-relativistic limit, E is approximately just m plus, some kinetic energy, and then higher order things that we're imagining are small in this limit. And so what that means is that there's an overall fast, quickly oscillating phase in both of these terms that is sort of just going to go along for the ride, and we'd like to sequester it away from the interesting things. And so what we're going to do is we're going to introduce a definition of phi that has the following form. So we're going to have an overall normalization factor. So we're going to explicitly pull out e to the I mt times a field psi. And since we're assuming that phi is a real field, we better make sure that our definition is consistent. So we'll consider this particular combination here. And so now you can sort of see how things match up with the original definition in terms of plane waves. Basically, we're just pulling out the fast phase from these plane wave modes. And later on, you'll see, so it's conventional to take C to be 1 over root 2m, and you'll see why in a second. But I figured I'd just leave it arbitrary for our discussion so you can sort of see what's going on. But the strategy is to just take this and explicitly substitute it into the original action and see what falls out. And we'll find the Schrodinger action as a result. So let me work that out. And you can imagine this is going to be pretty messy. So maybe I'll ignore the higher derivative terms for now and sort of just focus on the first few things. So if we do this explicitly, what we get for the Lagrangian is the following. Okay, so we get so you'll see now that you'll have time and space derivatives acting differently. And the reason why is because the time derivatives can hit both the psi and also this overall factor that we've pulled out, whereas the space derivatives will only ever hit psi. So keep that in mind as I'm writing things down here. So this is all just expanding out the kinetic term. Okay. So that's the quartic term. I missed the mass term, right? So the mass term, this is going to be just psi dagger psi. And the thing that I have to be careful about here is that there's also a whole bunch of other things. Okay, so what I've written down here in the first line, or in the first bunch of terms, is just the those terms which have no net factors of e to the imt running around. And so there are also terms that do have overall factors of e to the imt. And I'm not going to write them out. So the reason why I'm not writing them is because in the limit where we're at very low low momenta, then these exponentials oscillate very, very quickly. And so what's going on is that their effect effectively, well, what you can do is neglect them consistently in this limit. And so those modes are all, so those terms are all describing modes that are at high energies relative to the momenta that we're interested in tracking in the limit where. So when we're doing this expansion, what we're assuming is that we're in the limit where k is much less than m, right? And so that's in that limit, you can consistently ignore all of these terms that have the fastly oscillating phase.
Sorry, why? Yeah. Why are there no? How could any of these terms not have a factor of e to the int? Because the derivative is never going to get rid of it. It's never
going to
annihilate it. So it's
going to sit
there.
Right. So these, you'll notice all the terms here, they have one side diagonal side. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So these are all the, what I'm not writing down are all the ones that don't cancel.
Those are just the cross terms, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So this is what you get. Or at least this is the interesting part of what you get. And so now what I'd like to do is sort of just, well, okay, first of all, let's do the obvious thing. And this is why this whole program is in place in the first place. So this was the term, this was coming from the mass term, okay? And so we lost the factor of half because there was two ways to get psi dagger psi in that that expansion. And that's explicit, that's exactly canceling out a similar mass term that you get from the kinetic sector, okay? So the things that are left now all have this form. So let me one thing I could do here is be careful and define these sort of symmetrized derivative operators. But if you bear with me, I'm just going to effectively integrate these terms by parts, and then so what you end up with here is I c squared times 2m times psi dagger dt psi minus c squared, or I guess psi dagger del squared psi. So if we integrate the gradient term by parts, then this is what you end up with. I guess we're going to the right this time with the derivative. And but then there's also this extra piece here, this lambda c to the fourth over four psi dagger psi to the fourth. Okay. So that I think is everything. And now you can sort of see why it's conventional to pick c equal to 1 over root 2m, because that'll allow for the time derivative piece to look simple. So if we pick that choice, then what we get is psi dagger times I dt plus del squared over 2m times psi. And if you vary this action, then you get back the usual Schrodinger equations. And I mean, in principle, if you wanted to include a potential term, you could. So you can include a term that looks like this, and that would give you the potential term that you normally expect from looking at the Schrodinger equation. But here, what we have instead is a quartic term. So the question becomes: so, well, what's that quartic term mean in this context? And to get a sense of what it means now, let's go through and re-ask this question of scaling now. And before, the rule was that we were taking x prime goes to cx, and we were doing that, you know, we were doing that for time and space coordinates, right? So that was true for. So maybe let me write it out explicitly. So you got t prime is equal to c times t, and here. All the xi's we were taking to be scaling in the same way. Okay, but now, if we look at this kinetic term now, this is an energy term, and this is a kinetic energy, and we expect them to both scale in the same way. And so, what's necessary now is that our space derivatives and our time derivatives not scale in the same way anymore. And that's consistent because we're now assuming that we're working in this non-relativistic limit. And so effectively what you're doing is you're changing the way that time and space derivative scale or run in your Lagrangian. So now the rule is going to be that as we look at how the action changes, what we're going to do is we're going to take psi of x and t, and we're going to change that to psi of c times x and c squared times t. And if we do that, then we find that this term is invariant. If we redefine a field in the usual ways before with some a factor of c. In this case, it'll be c to the 3/2, I think. Let me just double check that. Right. And so what's happening now is that in our action, we have this integral of d4x sitting out front. And so now if we're doing this rescaling, then d4x prime is going to involve five factors of c, whereas before it was only four. All right. And so what that means is that even though your kinetic term here, they're both scaling with two factors of c, you need three out here in the volume form in order to redefine your dummy variable x in the required way to absorb it. And so what that means is that the field redefinition that you would do is now that psi prime is equal to psi over c to the 3/2. And on dimensional grounds, that makes sense too. From the definition over here. And the reason why is because, again, we're picking c equal to 1 over root 2m. And so what that means is that that the mass dimension of the psi field is different than the mass dimension of the phi field. So the psi field has mass dimension of 3/2. And before we finish this off, another interesting thing to point out, though, is that if this is the proper scaling, then you can see that this the term that was marginal in the relativistic case is now becoming irrelevant in the non-relativistic case. So if you go through the rescaling argument, and you find that lambda prime is equal to c lambda now. So whereas before it wasn't scaling under this transformation, it now scales with the positive power of c, which means that this interaction here in the non-relativistic case is irrelevant. And it turns out that if you look at quartic term is doing, it's acting like a delta function potential. So if you looked at solutions to the Schrodinger equation in the case of a delta function potential, then that's the sort of thing that's being described by this quartic term, it turns out. So if you want to know more about this, actually, I can leave you with the lecture notes that I've been using. So this is lecture. Lecture one in these notes on the archive. So let's see. This is archive 05100023 by David Beacon. Yeah, sure.
Why is this non-relative?
Well, it's non-relativistic because we're working in the limit where our mass is, our momentum is much smaller than the mass. Okay. And,
moment,
sorry, go ahead.
Is the moment you take e to the I, that's supposed to be e to the I p dot x, like 4 momentum p times 4 vector x. And if you go to the limit where you're not moving at all, like velocity 0, then you have no, like, three momentum, and only your all your mass, all your energy is your rest mass. So it's just mc squared. And then, so when you dot that, all your spatial components of your 4 vector disappear, and you just get e to the I mt. And that's basically it.
Right. And so I'm being a little bit sloppy here, but when I say that we can neglect these terms that are oscillating quickly, these exponential terms, in practice, what we're doing effectively is integrating out the antiparticle. And so what you can think of this process as doing in the the non-relativistic case is essentially forbidding you access to that second state, because your collisions are never occurring at momenta so high that you could actually produce an antiparticle. And so once they all annihilate away, there's no way to form them anymore. You can effectively integrate them out from your Lagrangian.
How? Okay. So I've seen this done before, but going from the full energy Lagrangian and just getting your the Klein-Gordon equation essentially, and doing basically the exact same thing, except then dropping out higher order derivatives in time.
Okay.
And you end up getting the Schrodinger equation for that.
Okay.
So my question, I guess what I'm uncomfortable with, how is this integrating out anything? Like, you're just dropping terms. When we've integrated things out before, you've ended up with an effective action that all of a sudden would have new higher dimensional operators. But if you're saying that by just dropping these terms, we've integrated particles out, shouldn't we have some effective operator that represents their existence?
In principle, you would. And so what we could do is we could go through and work out the form of all these higher derivative terms when written in terms of the psi field. And those terms will involve things like, so for example, here you would have things like derivative of psi with respect to time squared and things like that, or higher derivatives. And the question that you have to ask in that case, though, is what... which ones you need to keep to work to a fixed order in your effective Lagrangian, right?
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to keep, before in the relativistic case, you could say, well, I'm going to keep all of the, terms up to 1 over m to the fourth, or, something like that. And then you would sort of just write down the most general thing up to that accuracy that you wanted to keep. Here, though, you have to be a little more careful. And the reason why is that a time derivative counts like 2 space derivatives. And so what that means is that you could have a term like this, which has only 2 derivatives in it, and it's the same as a del squared psi, del squared psi dagger term, which has 4 derivatives, right? So these are this is why you have to be more careful in the non-relativistic case, because here you have 4 derivatives, here you have 2 derivatives, and they both have the same. They have the same order. So right. So if we wanted to put in a dimensionless coefficient, right, so that would be this would be c sub n over m to the fourth, I think. So here, let me just let me check that real quick.
Well, sorry. I understand that kind of where, like, maybe I can make a heuristic argument for why a time derivative has double dimension, because when you go down to the non-relativistic limit, you tend to get single derivatives coming in pairs with the single time derivatives coming with a second spatial derivative. However, so for example, in just the Schrodinger equation, you have I dt, right?
Yep.
And then within the same term, you have plus del squared over 2m. So if m is carrying dimensions of energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then each derivative carries a dimension of energy. Like, the point I'm trying to get at is that del squared term.
Yeah.
Well, if it's del squared over 2m has the same dimensionality as dit, right? It has to, because you're adding them in the same expression.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So if del squared has dimension, every spatial derivative has a dimension of 1, right?
Right.
Then that's 2
over the mass, which is 1, so then the dimension of the time derivative would also have to be 1.
That's right, and it is. But, right, so this is the confusing thing. I think what you're trying to say is that shouldn't this be an irrelevant operator because there's a 1 over m in the denominator? Is that?
No, I'm trying to say that over there you claim that yeah. every time you take a time derivative, that counts as 2 spatial derivatives in terms of dimensionality.
That's right. Yeah. So, well, oh, sorry. No. Okay. I see your worry. Yeah. Yeah. Just on dimensional grounds, it doesn't make sense. I'm making a statement about if you're working to a particular order in your effective field theory expansion, then you have to. It turns out that you, if you want to keep a certain number of time derivatives, you don't have to keep as many space derivatives as you think you do, because the space derivatives. Let me say it again. So these two terms would, let's write out their coefficients. So let me just finish that one thing off here. So let's imagine we get a term like this, and on dimensional grounds, the Lagrangian has to have mass dimension 4, right? So I think this should be 1 over m here, and that's effectively what I'm trying to say. Right. Okay. Good. And this term here, if we do the same counting, right? Mm-hmm. So this is 2 psi fields. That's mass dimension 3, because each one is mass dimension 3 halves, right? And so here you have 4, 3 plus 4, so minus 4, right? So this is a 1 over m cubed term, let's say. So let's call it d sub 1 and c sub 1, OK? Mm-hmm. So if you have two terms like this, you might think that if I only wanted to work to order 1 over m, then I can ignore this guy and only keep this guy. Mm-hmm. But if you're in the non-relativistic case, it turns out that's not the way things work. And the reason why is that 1 time derivative counts as 2 space derivatives. And so that these two terms will contribute equally in your effective theory. And so this is why. It's the scaling argument that shows you that. So effectively, what we've done is we've broken the rule that the mass dimension of the operator is tied to the order in the effective field theory expansion that you're working in. Here, this term, you should think, you know, if you're just using the rules that you learn in relativistic effective field theory, this term here, what you would say would be irrelevant because its coefficient has a negative power of mass. But it's part of the kinetic term, right? Yeah, I mean you can't neglect it. It has the same size as the time derivative piece, which you're keeping. So the moral of the story here is that the rules change when you go to the non-relativistic case.
Okay, so I kind of buy that, but like, why do the rules change? You say there's some argument that you give as to why they change.
Yeah, and the reason why is because of the way that the scaling rules change. Okay, so here we still scale the space components in the same way, but time scales with a different power. And so its derivatives count differently than the space derivatives.
So are you explaining why it scales as c squared time?
Right, yeah. So so the time part is scaling like t squared. Let's see. So I think let's go back to this expression up here, right? Before I substitute in for what c squared is. Here, the what's carrying the dimensionality is m, right? If c was a dimensionless quantity, then the way you would see that these two terms would have the same mass dimension is because of that extra factor of m there. And so at that level, I think you'd be willing to accept that these two terms are at the same order, right? I mean, they're both coming to you from the kinetic term in the relativistic case.
I kind of see that, but at the same time, I feel like based on like, I would agree with that because I've learned non-relativistic quantum mechanics. But if I hadn't learned that, then I would say that I should conceivably just be able to drop the term that doesn't carry dimension mass because dimension mass is huge. Like, because every time I see a mass, I'm going to throw in a c-squared, and I'm going to get, like, I don't know, 938 MeV or something. And that's going to be...
Right. So I think... if we ask this question over here, right, I think you'd buy that. Let's see here. So I think you're concerned that this term would be subdominant over this one because the mass is much bigger than the momentum, right?
Yeah.
And
which I understand.
Which, like, strictly speaking, would be true, right? If this were the energy operator. In the true sense, which was going to give you everything, including
right,
the rest
mass. Relativistic energy.
That's right. We've designed things so that now, basically, the energy that you read off is the energy that's left over once you subtract off the rest mass.
Okay, I think I might have an idea of where this is coming from too. So somewhere along the way, we decided to kill all derivatives in time, everything that had two derivatives in time, right? We wiped that out somewhere. Because we end up with something which only has linear derivatives in time, but quadratic derivatives in space.
I'm not sure if you get any terms like that just from the expansion of the terms we were considering here. I think this is complete. But it's definitely true that
there should be quadratic terms and then e to the 2i mt.
Oh, yeah. I agree, down here. That's true.
Right,
so you
kill those, and then that's why the scaling changes. Because now my field, when I change time, the field needs to scale. I have two fields and one time derivative, so it needs to scale in that way. Whereas in the other case, I have two spatial derivatives and two fields, so it needs to scale.
In a separate way. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're sort of forced into this situation. And if for example, we imagine that there wasn't, say these two terms didn't have the same scaling, okay, then in principle you could do RG evolution, and there would be no reason why the relative coefficients of those two terms should stay the same as you change energies. And so it would appear as if the Schrodinger equation would look different at different energy scales, right? And so these two terms are tied to one another because they're coming from a common origin. And so there's definitely a connection there. I mean, this mass here is no longer.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but I think so. If I was teaching a course in wave mechanics or whatever it would be called, your first course in quantum mechanics, you would naively believe that space and time are completely separate parameters that I can play around with as much as I want.
Right.
But in reality, if you do that, you're going to get things that don't make any sense. Because you're going to end up changing.
Well, you're safe if you're doing non-relativistic stuff. It's true, right? I mean, that's what we find the Lagrangian will satisfy in that non-relativistic limit.
I thought the argument was that if x scales as c, then t needs to scale as
c squared. That's right. Yeah.
So then they're not completely independent. Like they do change differently.
Okay.
But like you can't. What I'm saying.
But you would agree, though, that time and space are being treated not on an equal footing, right?
Yeah, this is basically where I am really confused right now.
Okay.
I feel like they should be completely, but it seems as though there's still some residual linking between them. When we say that if one scales in one particular way, the other has to scale in another particular way. And even though they don't scale linearly, they now once scaling quadratically instead of linearly. Maybe I'm not explaining what I mean.
Right. So as I formulated things here, the scaling rules were motivated from requiring that this term stay the same as you do these scale changes, right? And
right.
So that was put in as an ansatz here, not as something that we're derived. Right?
Okay.
So I think there's a disconnect there because of that. Now,
Sir, which term is invariant on the next term?
Sorry, this entire kinetic term. Yeah. Okay, so I think I've said pretty much everything I had to say about non-relativistic field theory. And so the idea in principle, there's a good exercise that you can do. You can repeat this with a gauge field and sort of see how things work out in that case. And you can work out the corresponding thing in that limit. So I can recommend that as an exercise. Actually, last time Cliff taught this course, that was one of the problems on the problem set at the end of the semester. So that's a good one to work through. I think that's it. And I see we just end there.
Okay. If you were to do this with a gauge field, I assume you mean it would be a massless gauge field. You would just not be able to, for the creation and annihilation operators of the gauge field, you would have to keep your relativistic.
That's right.
Because it's fixed, right? You don't have some, like, E to the I mass.
That's right. Yeah, the photon masses.
Yeah.